Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Playing a game with family or friends can be such a joyful way to pass time together, and it's hard to do it safely in a pandemic. Later this hour, I'll talk with Annalise Tarnowski of the Rook Room in Des Moines about how to take game night online during the holiday season or during the winter. But first, Mary Swander is a former poet laureate of Iowa, a playwright, an author, and executive director and founder of Ag Arts. And this year, she's added a few new adjectives to her description. She's now a podcaster and a biographer. In a few minutes, we'll talk about her new book, The Maverick MD, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez and his fight for a new cancer treatment. But we're going to start in what Mary calls Horse and Buggy Land, and that's the name of her new podcast, Ag Arts in Horse and Buggy Land. It's a reference to the rural Amish area that Mary lives in the middle of, and Mary is on the line with me now. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And listening to your new podcast takes me back in time to when I first became acquainted with you and with your work. You used to record essays about your life and read them on the radio on WOI Radio in a series called Iowa Voices. So this is a fun return for me. What was your inspiration for starting the podcast?
Well, as you say, I'd done monologues, little stories for the different public radio stations for years. And then, and thank you. I mean, really, you helped me get started on that. And then in the pandemic, I was, you know, before the pandemic, I was touring my plays from coast to coast, and that collapsed. And so I wanted to find a way to reach, you know, an audience that you didn't have to be on the road. And I wanted also to give people a little respite, some humor, some fun, some music, some interviews with farmers and artists, to give them a break in their day for the challenges that we're under. And it's working. I'm getting a nice fan base, probably the best email that I have ever gotten in my life was from a fan the other day who said, I just got out of the hospital for 7 days with COVID and it was really difficult, but your podcasts pulled me through.
Oh, wow.
I know. And so I was like, okay, my life is fulfilled as a writer.
That is lovely. And I mean, starting a new project in the midst of a pandemic is a pretty tall order.
It was crazy. You know, I'm working with wonderful, I call him my wizard technical assistant, Marco Caccio, but we've had to do it distanced for a large part of it. And then I also have a little sound studio that I set up in downtown Kelowna. And I can't tell you how many people are trying to open the door. You know, they all want in. I'm like, no, we're not open. I'm in here working, but I'm not open.
No, nobody gets to come in the door these days. For people who aren't familiar, Mary, with your life stories, and you have shared them in so many different ways over the years, but tell us a little bit about where you live.
I live in an old one-room Amish schoolhouse north of Kelowna, and I fixed it up, you know, as a living space. My Amish neighbors were, I think, placing bets on how long I would last here. They couldn't believe I was going to actually live in it. But I have a couple of acres of land, and I raise about 90% of my own food, and so I have a real homesteading situation going on here. And I've been here for 30 years, and it's been just so rewarding. And so I hope to share a little bit of that life with others in the podcast. And then, you know, I've gotten to know some of the other extraordinarily talented creative people that are out in the rural area, and I'm going to highlight them on the podcast. I have been. So, tune in. I've got a couple holiday shows coming up. There's a podcast now running about Marsha Wegman, an artist in Iowa City who's a landscape painter of rural areas, farmland, which you just don't see that often. You know, I'm trying to find things that represent the rural landscape that's often denigrated, and I'm trying to lift it up and make it sing.
In the part of Johnson County that you live in, the majority of the people who live there either grew up there or grew up Amish or grew up Mennonite. That's not part of your background. What drew you to this area?
Well, I actually was sick. I got really sick. And one of the ways to I had to remedy the situation was to eat all organic food. And this was back in 1983. And there just wasn't any organic food. You could get maybe like organic rice and peanut butter at the new Pioneer Co-op, which was about three aisles wide. And so I started coming. I was living in Iowa City at the time. I started coming down here. I just went around knocking on doors with the Amish, saying, you know, could you spare, you know, any of your chickens or ducks or broccoli that, you know, if that you've raised organically? And so I got to know the neighborhood, you know, from that. And then one day on the way home, I just happened to drive by and see that the schoolhouse had a for sale sign up in front of it. And I was like, I wonder how much that deal would be. And it was the most complicated real estate transaction in the state of Iowa, but I eventually got the schoolhouse and have been living here. And so it's just been a wonderful life here.
When you moved there, you were kind of the ultimate outsider. And,
right. You
know, people who move to small towns or rural areas in Iowa often talk about how it's difficult to be an outsider. It's difficult to be accepted. You're always going to be seen as a newcomer, even if you've been there for 30 years. How long did it take you to start being accepted and make connections in your neighborhood?
Well, I had a lot of that. The word went around the neighborhood that an old hippie was moving in, and and then the grandpa around the corner called me from the sale barn, and he bought a new buggy, and he wanted to haul it home, and I had a little pickup truck at the time with a hitch, and I went down, and I hauled it home for him, and he said, okay, that's great. He said, I'm going to tell the rest of the folks that I'm getting along with that old hippie just real good.
So that was the beginning.
You know, I will always be an outsider, but if you act in a neighborly way, you know, my neighborhood's been more than welcoming.
Well, and one of the stories that you share on your first podcast is about kind of being a connection to the outside world for your neighbors as well, which is how you've kind of found your role in the neighborhood.
Well, I have a phone. I have internet. I have a printer that copies things. I have a car. All of these things my neighbors do not have. And so we've worked out a nice cooperative relationship that way. I help them out if they have an emergency and need to go to the doctor, that kind of thing. And then one of the problems that the Amish farmers have is, you know, when they buy implements, things used to be advertised in the back of farmer magazines, and now everything's gone online. And so, you know, I've come upon them actually in the library, in the Kelowna Library, just sitting in front of a computer like, oh man, now what do I do? And so I help them buy tractors. And I know more about tractors and manure spreaders and everything else than I ever hoped that I would. But, you know, I help them get online. I help them bid. You know, they have these like live auctions. I help them bid, get on my cell phone, and we purchase these things. It's really funny. You scroll down through all of these implements, and they'll say, there, that one right there, that's good. That's my price. And I'm like, well, it is, but the shipping's going to kill you. And they're like, why, why? I said, well, that tractor is in Belize.
So, you know, it strikes me you have done so much to get to know people and to help share their stories. And that's what Ag Arts is all about, your organization.
Right.
You can find out more about Ag Arts at agarts.org. But we are living in this, you know, yet another moment where it's very clear that Iowans are deeply politically divided. And if you look at a map, you can see that those divisions lie along really the fault lines between urban Iowa and rural Iowa. Do you have some insight that you can share with us about maybe trying to bridge that gulf that seems to be widening?
Yes, we started a program, Ag Arts Artisan Residency. We put artists on farms and they stay there for a week to a month. And it's not a residency where the artists just, you know, hole up in a little space and don't come out for a month. It's designed to actually interact with the farmers and the artists and get to know each other, understand their issues and problems, and then reflect those issues in their artistic work. So we've been doing that for several years. We've brought musicians from Ireland. We've brought visual artists from Maine. We've brought writers, just a whole gamut of people, theater artists, and now we're trying to get their work that's based on these rural experiences to the rest of the people. I think it's just a matter of, like, you know, each side of the fence inching toward each other and getting some understanding of what's happening. It's really, you know, you can drive like 5 miles outside of a city and all the problems are quite different and foreign to the different camp,
right,
the other
right.
side.
Well, we're gonna talk more about that in just a moment. We're gonna go to the break here with a song that you feature in the second episode of your podcast. This is called "Selling Hogs." Paul Roberts and the Great Bluegrass Herons are performing this tune, and we'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Mary Swander, and her new podcast is called "Ag Arts in Horse and Buggy Land." You can find out more at agarts.org.
Now when we headed out for Stringtown, well, Dad made me roll the window down, 'cause he said I was a little bit too strong. And I had to admit I smelled like sin, but right about then we pulled into a place called the Wacko Hog Market. Selling hogs, selling
hogs. Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps training program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk about taking game night online so we can still have fun together, but safely during a pandemic. Right now, my guest is Mary Swander. She is former poet laureate of Iowa, playwright and author, executive director and founder of Ag Arts. We've been talking about her new podcast. It's called Ag Arts in Horse and Buggy Land. And in a few minutes, we'll talk about her new book, The Maverick MD. And Mary, just before the break, we were talking about ways to bridge that urban-rural divide in Iowa, and I know you've been working hard to do that through arts. And it's true that people in urban areas and people in rural areas may have some very different concerns, but we have so much in common, too, and right. It just feels like we've lost track of that.
Right. I mean, one of the great ways I find is through humor. And just in interactions, if, you know, you can, even if you can just share a joke, it's a real door opener. And we have, you know, tons in common. And we're all, you know, I think actually the pandemic has highlighted that we're all in this together and we got to figure our way out of it. And so anything you can do to bridge the, you know, fence, communicate with each other is needed right now, necessary.
Speaking of the pandemic, last time you and I talked, it was about your efforts and the efforts of some other folks as well to try to get the word out to your Amish neighbors about the dangers of COVID-19. And it's hard to know what's happening, but we know that the virus is raging in rural areas in Iowa. What How have you seen that play out in your neighborhood?
Oh, well, unfortunately, the Amish got hit hard with COVID-19. And, you know, there was so much misinformation going around. We got different signals about wearing masks in the beginning. And then, you know, the Amish are semi-communal society. And so when the restrictions were lifted on church services, you know, they go to church and there are 100 people there. They have weddings of 500 people, funerals. There was a funeral of 1,000 people here mm-hmm. this summer. And so it's not just here. It spread through the Amish communities all over the United States. And, of course, that just creates more community spread. So I've tried everything I can think of to help them understand the situation we're in. And it's just very tough.
It's very tough all over. So yeah. I want to talk about your new book. This is another, I think, new thing for you to take on the role of a biographer. This is the first time, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, I just jumped into this challenge. People are like, why do you do so many things? Well, I write poetry, I write plays, I write nonfiction. And so when this came up, I thought I could tackle it, and I did.
All right. Well, this is the Maverick MD, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, and his fight for a new cancer treatment. How did this come up? I was surprised to see that this project was your project. So tell me how this came about.
Well, as I said, I was very ill when I was in my 30s and 40s, and I, you know, got no help from the conventional medical structure, mainly because I was in so much pain. I'd been in a terrible car accident, and, you know, pain is just, especially from a woman, a young woman, is just written off as hysteria. You're making it up. It's all in your head. So that's what forces people to go off the page and try to find other healing modalities. And so I searched the world and came up with Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez in New York, and he helped bring me back to health. And I was a patient of his for 20 years. And he died suddenly, mysteriously, 5 years ago. And different colleagues of his, you know, contacted me and they said, Mary, this is your mission. You need to write a biography of him. And I was like, oh, man, that's going to be tough. But I pitched it to, he had a publishing company called New Spring Press, and I pitched it to them. And after, you know, they kind of settled into the situation, they said yes. And so I started, you know, the long process of going through all the documents, interviewing other patients, interviewing colleagues, interviewing his family, reading everything that he'd written. He'd written a lot. He had been a journalist for 7 years in New York City before he went to medical school. And so I started weaving this all together. I was looking at the other day, I wrote this incredibly elaborate, detailed outline before I even began. And it's interesting to see what dropped out and what moved around. But it was a lot of material. But basically, I wanted to not only, you know, flesh out this man's life, but the program that he came up with, the protocol, is not well known. And alternative treatments, you know, there's a lot of kooky ones out there. And so I wanted to show people this is very scientifically based and how hard he had to fight to try to get this out to the public.
Tell me a little bit about him. I mean, you tell us about him in the book in great detail, so the short version. But who was he, and how did he start exploring a dietary treatment for cancer?
Yeah, he was a man who grew up in New York from Mexican and Italian descent, and he was an Ivy League guy all the way. And he graduated from Brown University, became a journalist, and then he worked for Time Inc., and they put him on the science beat, and he started interviewing Nobel Prize winners like Linus Pauling, and Linus Pauling said, "Where did you get your medical degree?" And Gonzalez said, "I don't have a medical degree." And he said, "That's you what? You're asking me more probing questions than any of my Nobel laureate colleagues. You've got to go to medical school." So he pushed him out the door to medical school. And Gonzalez's father died of cancer. And so he, you know, was one of those people that stood by his father's bedside and said, "I'm going to find a cure for cancer." But he thought that his journey was going to be in a lab doing research at Sloan Kettering in New York. Well, how wrong he was. He actually stumbled upon this alternative method that was devised by a dentist, of all people, from Texas. And at first, Dr. Gonzalez just dismissed it and said, "No, I'm not interested in talking to some kook about some cure for cancer. I'm Sloan Kettering guy." And then he actually did an investigation of him, and then he apprenticed to him. And he graduated from his medical school, did his internship, so forth, and then found his way back to New York, where he set up his own practice and continued to do his research. But he wasn't satisfied to be an outlier in the medical community. Always wanted to be on the inside and have this whole program validated. And so if you're part of a university, you have access to grants and, you know, labs and so forth. But he just had his office in New York. But he found the financial backing to do a pilot study that was successful, and then the backing to do a clinical trial, which basically had every obstacle in the world put in front of him. And then he just started writing up his case studies of all the patients that he'd had over the years. And that's where he was. He'd really hit his stride when he died. He was, he was a writer, he was a researcher, a physician, and he was writing up these cases. But the thing I kept asking myself as a writer was, wait a second, how did this really straight guy in New York City, end up telling people to, being a doctor, telling people to eat all organic food? I just don't get it. And I kept asking myself, and I kept asking people that I interviewed, and what I found was that when he was a journalist, and actually sometime before that, he was an environmentalist, a naturalist. He loved the outdoors. He loved animals, plants, from camping trips that he went on as a kid. And he read. He just read widely. And he read some of the bigwigs in sustainable agriculture, Sir Albert Howard, Weston Price. And so he had that in his background, the concept that healthy soil produces healthy food that produces healthy people. And he saw things in the bigger, wider vision than we normally do in agriculture. And so he had that foundation, and that's what I believe allowed him to then go on to develop this totally innovative new health system. It isn't even really a alternative treatment, it's a whole health system.
And you mentioned that there are a lot of kooky things out there, and that's kind of an understatement.
yeah.
I have a person who I was related to, who I love very much, who rejected modern medicine and got cancer and only pursued alternative therapies and died very quickly. And, just a terrible tragedy. And we see in our culture this growth of people rejecting science. And I think what makes this story particularly interesting is that Dr. Gonzalez did not reject science. He wanted science to validate what he was seeing. And yet he was surrounded by a structure that didn't want that to happen. Tell me more about that conflict.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely. You know, there were people that came to him. He sort of filtered his patients, and if he thought they would do better on chemotherapy and radiation, he said, no, that's what you need to do, or you need to have surgery. This is not for you, my program. And so he had the utmost respect for conventional medicine. He was part of it. He felt like he was part of it. But I think, you know, there are so many kooky things going on there that basically conventional medicine just, you know, pushes back at all of them without taking the time to investigate the ones like this that actually might have some valid answers for people. And so he just hit a brick wall. There was like no support for him in that realm. And you know, it's so hard to be, you know, an outlier in your own group.
It does remind me, reading about his protocol, reminds me of the Walls protocol. Dr. Terry Walls, who lives in Iowa City, has developed a dietary approach to treating multiple sclerosis. And right now, that's in clinical studies to understand scientifically how this interacts with our body and with disease and how effective it can be as a treatment. Do you feel like there has been movement? Do you think that if Dr. Gonzalez were trying to study his methods today, do you think there would be more acceptance?
I would hope, but I would not be so sure. I mean, I asked his colleague about Dr. Wall's program. She said, yeah, that's right on target. That's right on track. And, you know, and I know she's had a lot of pushback, too. Mm-hmm. There's something, you know, there's some difference between the cancer industry and MS, which there weren't very many good treatments for to begin with. Autoimmune diseases are just the hardest thing to treat. Dr. Gonzalez told me that himself. And interviewing all these patients, I could see that where he could clear up people with stage 4 cancers in record time. And somebody actually like me with autoimmune disease, I'm still on the program because I have to keep, you know, doing it to maintain. And other people that I interviewed said, yeah, no, I have to stay with it. So it kind of depends on what the illness is. Hopefully this will all gradually get better. But you read the book, you'll see the fight that he had to constantly wage against this. And then Dr. Kelly, the dentist who originated the program, he just went down the tubes because of the harassment and pushback that he got.
Well, and if you, you know, put Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez into a search engine right now, you're going to find a lot of people that dismiss him as a quack.
Right. And absolutely. I mean, it's just incredible when you pull up, you know, the Wikipedia page and you're like, what? And so, you know, you just have to be aware that there's, you know, a whole team out there that think anybody doing alternative programs at all is a quack.
What do you want people to take away from Dr. Gonzalez's story?
I think, you know, really, it's all about critical thinking. It's like, well, you know, we can have an open mind and still be scientists and still probe situations and problems and not just, you know, the blanket, this is black and white. If anything I've learned from this is nothing is blanket black and white, no matter what issue you're probing. And then also you see a man with enormous courage. I just can't believe what he, you know, the daily fight that he had to go through while he was seeing some of the sickest patients ever. People were flying in to see him from all over the world. And then, you know, he would work all day with his patients, answer phone calls for a couple hours at the end of his day, and then, you know, go home, have dinner, and start his research, working on his research at night and working all weekends. And so he was, you know, a person who just would not quit. And you know, and that's a great role model to have in many ways. What, no matter what obstacles are put in front of you, you keep going and you keep doing great work.
Speaking of keeping going and doing great work, is there another surprise you have up your sleeve, Mary? We only have about 30 seconds left, but I'm always so curious to see what you're going to do next.
Well, I'm working on some other projects, yes, but right now I'll say get on the podcast Ag Arts from Horse and Buggy Land and buy the book The Maverick MD. It's at Prairie Lights and online at Amazon.
All right. Mary Swander, thank you so much, and please stay safe.
Thank you, Charity. You too.
Mary Swander, former poet laureate of Iowa. She is the executive director and founder of Ag Arts. You can find out more at agarts.org. She's got a new podcast called Ag Arts in Horse and Buggy Land. You can find on the website. And her new book is The Maverick MD. This is Talk of Iowa.